I am not a journalist at all, really. So I'm definitely kind of an odd duck in this lineup. I consider myself I'm a public health person. I do public health research. I've worked at Drexel School of Public Health doing research for the past 5 years. I kind of come at this from the academic public health side of things, as of Michael Udell, who co-created this with me. He's a associate professor, School of Public Health. He's a public health historian. He's interested in vaccine safety and autism and all of this stuff. But somehow, we now have this blog and column with the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is one of the two major daily newspapers in Philadelphia. So the Public Health is a blog and column. We post 3 times weekly. Lots of the snippets appear in print. Each post is between ballpark 500 to 750 words, and we get about 20,000 views a month, which I've been told is pretty okay. So just to give a little bit of background, so I'm going to give some history about how this came to be, and then really to share my experience in case any of you public health people wanted to kind of try to pursue a similar opportunity with your local paper and kind of talk about some of the challenges that I've encountered in the past year. So I guess summer of 2011, the dean of our School of Public Health, Marla Gold, met with Don Sapatkin, who's the deputy editor for Health and Science at the Inquirer, just because they're old friends, and they talked. And somehow it came up that the Inquirer used to have a medical resident write about their experience, like becoming a doctor and being a medical resident. And somehow this idea got floated out there that, you guys have like doctoral students in public health. Let's try the same model. Now, obviously, being a doctoral student in public health is not even really comparable to being a medical resident. The experience is very, very different. But so I met with Don and Carl Stark, who's the editor at the Inquirer, and we hit it off. And it seemed like it'd be really, really cool to kind of write about public health on a regular basis for the newspaper. They wanted me to do it 3 times a week, however, because that's how you're supposed to do a blog. And that was not possible at all. I have a job in school, and that wasn't going to happen. So I brought in Michael, knowing he's an interesting guy and that he's written some books for the popular press and that this might work. So we met, and we hit it off, and the public's health came to be. So I have to ask this question of, why would a newspaper just let these two guys with no training and no journalistic experience start writing for them? And I don't really know, but my guess is they were kind of like the Chronicle. The Inquirer was struck with a very large round of layoffs. And at the same time, I think, like a lot of papers, they had to expand into the web and expand social media. And they saw this as pretty much free labor, knowing that we saw this as an excellent opportunity, which it is, both for our careers and also, for the field of public health, to be able to have this platform and this backing from a major newspaper to pretty much say whatever we want, more or less. So it was kind of a cool opportunity that we couldn't resist. And we say whatever we want, but we also, the way this is different kind of from your standard blog, I feel, is that, everything has editorial oversight. So everything we write, the editor reviews, and everything goes through him. So these are a couple things that I consider ingredients for a good post. This is just in my experience in 1 year, and I'm very curious to hear what other people think as well. And we haven't, evaluated this. It'd be really interesting to see if a post has this component or that component and which are more successful, but we've done none of that. So this is just kind of what we kind of like to try to integrate, and this isn't an exhaustive list. But one thing, obviously, because it is a blog and has this bloggy feel, is some sort of personal anecdote. And this, we often use these as a lead into our piece. It could be something as simple as, I was walking in my neighborhood and I realized there were no trash cans in my neighborhood. And then write a piece about trash cans and litter and urban blight and go hold that whole route. It could be my grandmother is getting older. I'm worried about her behind the wheel and go into a story about, elderly driving safety and kind of synthesize that body of research in 500 words. But I think personal is always good and kind of is keeping with the blog idea. Of course, local. So we try to localize everything to Philadelphia whenever possible. The super local stuff is, when we're talking about an initiative in Philly, the Philadelphia Department of Public Health does a lot of cool stuff. And we're always, getting emails, and we love that because it just makes our job easier because we're very, very crunched for time. Or just, if we're writing about something, just, talk about the local implications, get some public health statistics, describe the problem at the local level, even if, you know, that's not the focus of your story. You're talking about something much, much more broadly. Current events, of course, you know, trying to tie what we're talking about to current events in any way, shape, or form. You know, because we're short on time, this doesn't always happen. Sometimes we just write about what's easy sometimes, but always try to tie to current events, and sometimes, you know, the current events are the post, as the election is, for example. We've been writing about the election and public health a whole bunch. Historical context, this is something that I think is really interesting and fun to learn about. You know, public health has a pretty rich history in the United States, and kind of a lot of it, you know, is this old school public health, as I like to call it. You know, it's about infectious disease and communicable disease and all this stuff, you know, from the early 20th century, and kind of telling that story and then the contemporary implications of that and how that relates to public health today. So, for example, one of the oldest surviving quarantine stations, maybe the oldest in the country, is on the Delaware River. It's called the Lazaretto. So I wrote a post about that and then interviewed the quarantine officer at the Philadelphia airport. We still have one, and they have a quarantine office there, and they pretty much do the same thing that the Lazaretto did way back in the day. So history, I think our readers find it interesting. Links, lots of links. So, you know, coming at this from an academic perspective, we feel completely obliged to cite our sources and cannot do it. We start to twitch if we don't. But it's great because we can just link to things without, you know, footnoting or diverting or anything. So, you know, whenever we are talking about a study, we just, you know, we cite the PubMed entry. You know, we try to cite, just like you were writing an article, we try to cite the best sources possible, and we just fill our post with tons of links. People actually seem to click on them and read them, which is interesting, and then comment about them. So we've had, you know, people critique the study designs of the articles that we reference, which is cool because that's great that people actually care enough to read. That could be a very small proportion of our readership, but they're the ones who comment sometimes. And finally, children and animals. Huge, huge, huge hits. So whenever we write about anything about children or animals, there's this flurry of comments, and people are all passionate and crazy about children and animals. I think one reason is because, you know, in public health, kind of one of our barriers is this whole individual responsibility discourse. You know, just eat healthier, just exercise, just go to the doctor, and, you know, don't really consider all the social determinants that we know about, which is public health. But when we're talking about children and animals, their individual responsibility is a little bit less, and it makes for these really interesting discussion. So we try to fold them in where we can. So I made a typology, being an academic-y type, of the different types of posts. So I looked through, you know, over the past year and kind of came up with five or six different types of blog posts that we write. So one is just kind of like the straight up public health education post. You should wear bug spray so you don't get West Nile virus, and here's why. It's really important that you do this. So these are kind of aimed at behavior change. They're very informative. They're often kind of the quickest and easiest to write, just because, you know, there's a lot of information out there on the CDC websites and stuff like that that makes these kind of quick posts. The other one is kind of the public health statistics report, as I would call it. So when we got into this, Michael and I signed up for about a million different e-newsletters, pretty much everyone out there. So we have this stream of kind of information and reports and statistics coming into our inboxes. So sometimes, you know, there'll be a report. This one was on breastfeeding nationally, and they break it down by state, and hopefully they also break it down by city and county, so we can drill down and talk about the state and the city and this public health issue in question. These I call the kind of the expanded conversation posts. So in these we talk about an issue that, you know, has been covered in the media. It's already, you know, everyone knows it's a problem, it's a social problem, people consider it to be a health issue, but kind of expand the dialogue around that issue. So, for example, we have a ton of abandoned buildings in Philadelphia, like many old Northeast cities and probably cities all over the country. And there was a fire over the summer in this old warehouse, two firefighters died, and there was all this uproar about these abandoned properties are a huge safety hazard, we have to do something about this. And of course, they are a huge safety hazard, they can burn down, they have rusty nails, there are vermin, there could be toxic pollutants. There's all this kind of obvious stuff. But then there's also, you know, in public health, there's this kind of other body of research that's kind of more sociological and economic in nature. So I talked about the abandoned building problem and kind of the broken windows theory and how that might contribute to crime and people not exercising because they don't feel safe. And then also the economic implications of abandoned buildings and the city not getting property taxes. And if we did get that property tax money, what we could do with all that money for the city and the public's health. So kind of just expanding the conversation. And in doing so, showing people what public health is and all that public health is. This type of post, we pretty much just describe one article in depth. It's often just an article that's related to current events, but then also just that we find like really, really interesting. It might not be the most important article, but it's interesting. In our early conversations with the Inquirer, Carl Stark said, you know, just tell me something I don't know. And I've always kept that in mind. Like, all right, like what's something I would like to read that would be interesting? So this was one of my favorite articles. It was really interesting. It was an article in the American Journal of Public Health about 3 years ago. And the researchers looked at the association between oil prices, motorcycle ridership, and motorcycle fatalities. So in short, gas prices go up, more people get motorcycles to save money on gas, they're new to riding them, they don't know how to ride them, they crash, and they die. That's what this study showed. And around the same time, Obama kind of gave a speech where he was talking about oil speculation and why this is a problem. So I kind of tied it to current events and synthesize this one interesting study that was relevant in a public health context. We have like the op-ed-y pieces that are really, really opinion-based. This is one Michael wrote on Supreme Court decision regarding the ACA. These are more opinionated than others. All of our posts really do have an opinion slant to them because they're from a real public health perspective. But some are, you know, it's just very, very explicit, and it really reads a lot like an op-ed. And finally, we have the posts that are just incredibly successful, and we don't really know why. So this one I think got the most hits. It got published in print in full. It was about dog poo in Philadelphia and public health implications therein. So we have, you know, we have many cities, you know, we have a lot of dogs in Philadelphia, but we have like 5 dog parks. And San Francisco, I think, is among the best cities when it comes to dog parks, and so is Denver. Philadelphia, we have like 5 and tons of dogs. So it really is a public health problem. It's kind of this old school public health of, you know, kids playing and, you know, getting dog feces on their hands and going home and eating it. But then I think another, even a bigger problem is that in my local park, which was the impetus behind this post, is that the kids weren't playing in the park and engaging in physical activity because they thought there was dog poo everywhere. So the park where, you know, kids are supposed to recreate and exercise and have fun and play football, it became dog area because there was no other area for the dogs. And this one was very successful. I wrote another one about liquor control laws. Philadelphia or Pennsylvania has really goofy liquor control laws where you have to buy liquor here, beer here, you only can buy cases. You can buy 6-packs here. Everything's closed on Sunday. And we're one of the most conservative states in that respect, and we were finally talking about reforming it. But interesting, around the same time, the Community Preventative Services Task Force did this study, and they're like, no, these laws are like really, really good for public health. So I kind of sided with the Community Preventative Services Task Force and was called unbelievable names by everybody, which was kind of fun, but also it kind of hurts a little bit. So challenges. So the comments are actually, they were a challenge for me at the beginning. Michael didn't find them as challenging because he'd written more, you know, books for the popular press and, you know, has been critiqued and called names. But, you know, we're spending all our time doing this and staying up late, and people just call you an idiot a billion different ways, but you get used to it. Another major challenge, I mean, is time. So, you know, this is not a grant-funded project, so, you know, Michael and I both have jobs where we have to do certain things. I have school, Michael has a family. So time's an issue, and I mean, time definitely does constrain. I mean, it has to affect quality to some extent. I mean, I think we don't post anything that we're not happy about, but also, you know, we only have so much time to do these things. 3 times a week. One thing I forgot to mention early on, we just created this expert panel of bloggers. So we've reached out to other people in the local public health community to write for us. So the chief of staff for the Philadelphia Department of Public Health is going to write for us. A few academics at different institutions in the area, someone from the zoo, someone from a restaurant chain in the area. So that's our way of also trying to to keep the frequency up given our constraints. Another issue is kind of how to write about really complex issues in 750 words when you only have so many hours to do it, and you get the sense that your audience is not, I get the sense that our audience is not where the public health community thinks they are. That's just my sense, but there's a lot of educating to be done, and that's tough to do in 750 words, especially around things like racial disparities in health and the social determinants of health. It's really hard to talk about that in such a brief area. Social determinants, for example, I mean, it's these forces, you know, agency and structure, right? People do have agency, people do have free will, but their free will is determined by all these complex socioeconomic forces. This is what we talk about in public health. It's really easy to write a post and make a community in Philadelphia sound hopeless, right? And that's not what we want to do at all. It's inaccurate and it's extremely disempowering. So that's something we really struggle with, and I think I at least have shied away from writing about those issues as much as I would like to, just because I don't know how to do it well yet and really do it justice. And yeah, that's it. And with this picture, the research shows that rats who comment online are dumber than the rats who don't. This just keeps me going. The comments are really bad. On Philly.com at least, but just like to remember, you know, for every 10 horrible comments, there's at least 2 people who really like what you wrote and they get it, or we enlighten them in some way. And here's a web address. Check it out. I'm currently on hiatus till after Christmas because I have to write my dissertation proposal. Kind of has to happen. But yeah, Michael's still posting, and we have the expert panel, and we're keeping up the frequency. And yeah, look forward to questions afterwards. Thank you.